Mr. Sykes, Real 12. We were talking about the conditions on the march from Pongau to Salzburg. It took about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Did you find it very hard going?
Well, it wasn't too bad, really. I mean, we didn't do... I can't remember the exact mileage. I've no idea. It was about 60 kilometres. Now, how that works out in a day. In other words, we didn't do a terrific lot of miles a day because, I mean, there was a lot of us. And some of them scourge carts and things from various places. And we're pushing these as well. And of course, it's very hilly, and a lot of it was uphill and downhill. So, when you weren't marching hundreds of miles a day, anything ridiculous like that, it was a fairly cushy sort of a march, if you understand what I mean.
So your health wasn't suffering on the march?
Oh no, oh no, we're pretty fit.
And about what month was it? You reckoned you'd escaped about February. Would this be the March then?
It'd been Marches, I should think, something like that, you know what I mean?
And
because I think I've an idea that we were in Salzburg by about Easter. So, you know, that would give you some idea.
And what happened at Salzburg when you arrived there?
When, as I say, we did all this on the march. And when we arrived at this place, just outside, we were put into huts and everything. It was like a big, you know, a bit like the prison camps we've been in Italy.
Were you joining a whole load of other prisoners, or was it just you 200?
Oh no, when we got there, there were hundreds of them there. There were hundreds of prisoners there. They had, in fact, been rounding up prisoners of war from all over the place. And so all we'd done there, we joined up with a whole lot of them.
So it was back to a camp, a proper camp,
back,
as you say.
Fairly, you know, fairly loose. Not dead strict, not all that strict. I mean, we were pretty well left to our own devices, you know what I mean.
Did they actually keep you from going outside the camp, though?
Oh, yes. It was all barbed wire. And, as a matter of fact, I tried to get out one day because we'd seen a store across from where we were, and we'd thought we'd seen stairs in it. And I was climbing the barbed wire and slipped all my finger up.
Your little finger and side of the hand.
And all the way up there. You see the thing there. Looked it all over.
Weren't you worried about being shot climbing the wire?
Well, as I say, at the time, they were fairly... I think they realised that the war was... Or their part of the war was going over, you know. And so they weren't as strict as they might have been. You know.
But they'd have physically stopped you.
Oh, they'd have physically stopped us.
You didn't...
I think we outnumbered them fairly well, you know what I mean. Excuse me, I remember going down to this young first aid place, and they had it was in these clips that you clip paper with, and you got one of them, and they clipped it together with steel things, you know, just for people to go to the table. And we'd been there, I don't know how long we'd actually been there, but not all that long after we got there. And one day, as if by magic, really, all the Germans seemed to disappear. And we saw coming down the path a truck with a flag on it, with a red cross on it. And it was the Yanks coming in.
Had you been expecting the Russians?
Well, when we went out, we were expecting the Russians. But when we got there, it was only Yanks came floating in. And that was all. We were...
How did you feel? Was there a big sort of...
Oh, it sort of happened just like that, is it? And it sort of happened and you didn't realise it happened. You know, 1 minute it seemed the Germans were there, the next minute they seemed to be gone and the Ants had moved in.
How did you feel personally about it?
I was very relieved, obviously. And we pulled the wire down and went out and scrounged around. You know, I told him I'd try to get to this store. We went and got as much stuff out as we could. We thought it was porridge and made a big dirty and found out and yet it was bran. So everybody was running about for some time afterwards. But not long after that, sort of a day or two, the Yanks came in and lumped us out with their, what they call their K-rations. And in that, you've got everything. You know, I mean, they're supposed to be their frontline rations, and they had everything you could think of, including chocolate, cigarettes, tins of fruit, you know, you name it, that was in it. And I remember that we made pigs of ourselves and we were very sick.
I was going to say, did anyone warn you not to eat too much when
we just dished it out. And we had it, and not being used to, you know, although we'd had the first parcels and that, but we'd not been used to a lot of rich food and all that kind of thing. Well, certainly not while we'd been marching and for the last few days of the thing. And, you know, we stuff chocolate down yourself and you get too much of it, you can try and make a bit of a figure yourself. And, and I remember they set up mobile cinemas for us to watch films at the side of the road.
What was the state of your health when you, I mean...
Actually, it was very good, really.
Had you lost a lot of weight or anything? Or?
No, I don't think we'd lost any weight. I was always fairly thin then, you know, something to do with it. And I was always fairly behind in that. And no, in actual fact, I think being up in the Alps where the air was fresh and clean and we'd been out working and we had reasonable food, you know, the same as the air on the Red Cross bars, we kept pretty healthy. And the only thing I remember having done was the tooth pull, that was all in, that was all out of that tooth. And I think I told her that time when I was in there and I had the boys and had the injection for that. But, you know, apart from that, we kept pretty healthy.
So they set up cinemas and things. Were you itching to get home? I mean, you've been released.
They got us all new gear and everything and all that, you know. We had washers and baths and showers and they gave us all this Yankee gear and that, you know. And
What about was the date you were released?
I can't remember exactly, but it'd be an idea it was round about Easter time.
Easter, right.
Round about Easter. And then what they did, they rounded everybody up. Gradually, they flew everybody out of Salzburg with the intention of sending us all home, obviously. And we flew out one day on a Dakota. And they took us from there, from Salzburg, to Reims in France. When we got to Reims again in France, again we went through all the big murals we were in house in and the washing and they fixed us up again with all new gear. That was all, it was all Yankee stuff. All Yankee, all American I should say, I suppose. All American tanks and things, you know. And we stayed in the camp in Reims for some time, or probably about a fortnight, something like that. And then, from there, the RAF flew us home. They flew us home in Lancaster. And again, I was in charge of the group, and I was first on. And I sat right in the front, where either the front room, or I used to, I suppose, used to, and I sat there. And they'd marked the number the plane, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I think they did about 15 or 20 of us, and they all had their own little bit and just sat on the plane and they took us home.
Where did you land?
We landed at a place called Dunsfold, which is near Guildford. A place called Dunsfold, which is near Guildford. I know that because I know.
Had you had a chance to let your family know?
No chance to let anybody know anything. And so what we did, once we got there, the first thing they did there, when we got off the plane, was squirt all this delousing powder on us again, around our, you know, and up our arms and everything. And so that was my first reaction to landing in New York, powdered again.
You didn't really need it though, did you?
Well, no, we'd been deloused and redone and God knows what.
Because you hadn't had lice at...
No, we hadn't had it. Better lice.
At clientele.
That was the thing. I think everybody was getting down and kissing the earth and wondering, you know, saying, thank God, yeah. Acting a bit soft, I suppose, as you do. And then again, of course, this time, within about a day, we got rid of all our Yankee gear. We fixed up with two lots of British uniforms, even to having stripes sewn on. Now I've got stripes and gun and flags. Had all that sewn on. They gave us a sort of a fistful of money and passes. Railway warrants. He said, right, clear off home and we'll contact you when we want to. And that was the end of it all. And we just went home. And of course, eventually, we were contacted.
What kind of a reception did you get when you got home?
Like, well, of course, by then we had a chance to phone up and say that we were coming and everything. And I remember that when I got home, well, of course I live in the Denmark, in the Norton, there was an air raid shelter on the road outside, and all on this, they put bunting and balloons and all that kind of jazz, and big signs, welcome on.
So you were on leave then? How long did they give you for leave? Had the war ended by then?
No, oh no, I think the war ended by then.
How did you...
We think about the leave for weeks, weeks and weeks before.
But you were called back up before the war ended?
No, we weren't actually.
So you were on leave at the...
We were sort of on permanent leave until we got finally called up and we were sent for demob.
How did you feel while the war was still on? Did you worry that you might get sent back?
No, never gave it a thought. We were too busy having a good time. You know, we just, of course, a lot of the South Africans got back. We met up with one another. We used to go out every day on the beer and find out where the pubs were that were open. I mean, just we had a shortage of beer and some pubs were open, some weren't.
Did you have any trouble? Some prisoners of war, when they come back, you know, they want to be back all that time, and then when they get back, they can't cope with it. Or did you have any trouble settling in? Or
not at all. No, not at all. how that pays to get back. And we just, as I say, we set out to have a good time, and that's what we did. And dancing at night time, and boozing during the day. And
so it hadn't affected you mentally? I mean, you know.
No.
What about physically? You'd had these wounds. I mean, were they...
No, they didn't hurt all of us, you know what I mean. And, I've still got scars in my back and that, obviously. But I think we were that relieved to get out. You didn't take any notes, you know, how you are when you're young and everything, you know.
Did you have any special celebrations for the actual, you know, the end of the war? Well, V-Day.
On V-Day, I always remember V-Day, I remember that very well, because it was the last time I was drunk, and we went out during V-Day, we went out to a club, because that was the only place that had done anything that was going. They, of all things, they've got gin and Guinness, and I don't like Guinness anyway, so I was drinking gin. And I remember being in this club, playing the machines and drinking gin.
What machines? Sorry.
These.
One-arm bandits.
One-arm bandit things, type things. And I remember being in the club, and I woke up in a room, and I could see, like, flickering lights and everything. I thought, God, where am I? And they hadn't taken me home, to my brother-in-law's house, because by then I'd met his sister, who was now my wife, you know, and went back home. And they put me in their small bedroom at the front, and I'd been terribly sick, and there was a bucket at the side of the bed. I'm not proud of this. And the flickering lights, and got a bonfire going in the street, and they were celebrating VJ. And that taught me a lesson, and I've never been drunk or had much.
And which was that? Was that VE or VJ?
VJ.
What about VE Day? Had you had any celebrations?
I can't remember that.
What about your call up for demobilisation then? When did that happen? Was that after VG Day?
Yes.
And what happened then?
When I got called up for demob.
You'd been on leave until then, I presume?
We'd been on leave until then. I had the notice to go, and we went up, I think it was near Oldham. I remember, I think it was Leeds or somewhere up that way, somewhere up north. And we went into this place, and we walked through, and you were given a suit and a hat and an overcoat and shoes and socks and shirts and things, which you picked out of children or things. I mean, they were happy to be like, you know. You picked all these things up, left your army gear, and that was it. You were out. You finished.
Now, you'd been a driver, hadn't you, before the war? What were you planning during your leave? Had you tried to find employment?
No, during the leave, all we bothered about during the leave was having a good time, to be perfectly honest. Because we'd got sacks of brass, because we'd been all that while, you know, 2.5 years, I think we'd got all that back pay to come. In fact, when I had that much back pay, I know it doesn't seem a lot now, but I was able to put a deposit on the house down. You know, eventually that, eventually finished that night. So, had a good time.
What did you plan to do then? I mean, you're out of the army when you're demobilised.
Well, once I got demobbed, of course, well, I should have said, of course, before I got demobbed, I got married. You know, and actually, I was married in uniform, before we and we got married, and then, of course, I lived with her parents, you know, where we ended up with them, and I always started looking for jobs, and we got there was jobs going at the Silver Lawns depot, and I think they were trying to get as many blokes as they could that had been in the forces to, you know, to try and give them jobs. And whilst I was there...
What did you get a job as? As a driver or...?
No, I got a job in the offices. As an account audit clerk, of all things. I've never been audited in my life or anything like that. But that was a job that I got. And while I was there, I got somebody, met somebody who knew somebody that had a house going, and we bought the house. And the people that we actually bought the house from, he had been he'd not been in the army, he'd been in reserve occupation, and worked for Raleigh Industries. And he asked me what I was doing, and what sort of a job it was. And he said, I can get you a better job than that at Raleigh, if you want it. So it meant working on the benches and everything, but I was a young married man, I wanted as much money as I could get. And so I went and worked for Raleigh. And ended up working there for about 13 years, something like that, at this particular job.
So you didn't have any particular trouble getting back into employment?
No, not at all.
Had the war changed your personality in the sense of, you know, just your army duty, and you were a senior sergeant? I mean, do you think the army and the war had done any harm or any good? Or?
It had made me, I had a fairly sheltered sort of a life before I went in the army, you know, I mean, I'm living in Yamaha and just feel like I wanted to live and never drank, smoked, went out with young ladies or anything like that sort of thing, you know, as I say, because it was, I wouldn't say I've never been out with your lady, but you know what I mean, I've never been around all that much, and of course, I learned the few facts of life while I was in the army, and you know, that made a difference to me in that sense. It hardened me up, and from that point, it made me much more confident, self-confident, and how to get on with people and that sort of thing. Well, it certainly did that.
When you when the South Knots reformed, were you tempted to rejoin?
No, I never was, actually.
Why was that? Was
no, I don't know. I don't I think that, as I say, I've got a wife and by then a small child, and I was more interested really in looking after their benefits and everything rather than taking it, you know. I don't think it ever occurred to me to do anything against the ministries.
Thank you very much.
Okay.